Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
To convince a child to keep walking, try switching roles with them. Let the child play the role of the parent. They'll immediately do what you want them to do.
You are raising in your home people that the Bible is very clear about their status. They need to be converted, not just a conformity of their behavior. They need a transforming encounter with the gospel of Jesus Christ. That is the ultimate priority.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
A classic parenting error. This is Wretched Radio. Before we get to the blunder that so many of us make on a daily basis when it comes to raising our kids, even being married, would like to do a shout out. Gotta do it. This here Wretched Radio program is based in Atlanta, and as you know, we are sports experts, so I've got to do a shout-out to the Atlanta Broncos. Congratulations.
Braves.
To the baseball team for winning Wimbledon. Congratulations.
World Series.
All righty. Congratulations to the Braves for winning the World Series by having a lot of birdies.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, good. See, there you have it. We are your sporting experts. And another big deal here in the ATL, like you, probably it was election day a few days ago. Jimmy, I have to tell you, this whole voter fraud thing.
Oh, yeah.
Troubling. Very, very troubling. Our elections in our town were nothing but a couple of referendums and city council positions. That was all there was. So, of course, we went and voted on Tuesday, the day that we should be voting. Right. And we voted for the city council. Woke up the next morning, and the new city council member was Joe Biden. How does that work? Exactly. Let's get to a classic blunder.
You fell victim to one of the classic blunders. The most famous is never get involved in a land war in Asia. But only slightly less well known is this. Never go in against a Sicilian when death is on the line.
And don't make the blunder of thinking that children are supposed to make you happy. Furthermore, don't think that your spouse exists to make you happy. Whether you're thinking about married or you are married, this is a blunder that we constantly make. Looking away from our source of happiness, contentment, joy, peace, security, and looking to another. And when we do that, we just make a dog's breakfast out of our homes. If we expect our kids to make us happy, well, they're probably not going to do that very often. And I happen to have an article from The Atlantic that supports my position. The question is, does parenting make you happy? Some of the most prominent scholars in the field, so these are secular psychologists, have agreed that if you want to be happy, it's best to be childless. Huh? The early research is decisive, so they say. Having kids is bad for quality of life. Define quality of life. In one study, psychologist Daniel Kahneman and his colleagues asked about 900 employed women to report at the end of each day every one of their activities and how happy they were when they did them. They recalled being with their children as less enjoyable than other activities. That actually doesn't surprise me a ton. If you're working all day, exhausted at the end of the day, then you get to go home and do the important work. They're not going to make you happy. The problem is we expect them to, and perhaps that's why we even have them. It's going to be such a gas. Well, often it's not. It's just a lot of work. And it appears that most people in our culture, they're ultimately glad they had kids. They wouldn't want to be without them, but they confess the kiddos aren't making me happy. Having children, particularly when they are young, involves financial struggle. Yep. Sleep deprivation. Check. Stress. For mothers, there's always the physical strain of pregnancy. There's breastfeeding. They can make you exhausted, especially if you are looking to them to make you happy. A deep puzzle remains, writes The Atlantic. Many people who would have had happier lives and marriages had they chosen not to have kids, yet they still describe parenthood as the best thing they've ever done. So why don't we regret having children more? This is the classic blunder that so many people make. There is only one who can bring you joy and happiness and fulfillment and contentment. There's only one who is consistent and constant and will never let you down, and that is Jesus Christ. When we are not looking to him, first of all, we have a worship disorder. Second of all, we are looking to a lesser idol that can't deliver on your expectation. A four-syllable word for your consideration. You have kids. You're thinking, oh, if we just had a child, that's going to make us happy. Well, then congratulations, you get pregnant. How's your lower back? How's the morning sickness? Are you happy now? Then you deliver the child, and wow, you learn a four-syllable word you didn't even know existed. Meconium. You remember meconium? Did that make you happy? When they throw up on stuff, does it make you happy? When they don't listen to what you tell them to do, does that make you happy? No. It doesn't. And I suspect me saying happy that way isn't making you happy at all. And that's what kids will do. They will just inevitably get on your nerves. Why? Because they're kids. You're an adult. You have different desires and expectations than they do. Fun to them is not fun to you. It probably involves cleanup activity. And by the way, if I could, as an aside, have you seen that commercial of the dad that's on the floor sitting at the coffee table with the kids? I don't even know what the product is, but they're just making a mess. There's glitter and paint, and they're smooshing and making finger all over the coffee table. And the voiceover says something about, when you're a great parent. Ah, I see. So making a mess out of our home and destroying the coffee table, that makes me a good parent. Terrific. I guess the world has a definition of what a great parent is than I do. Back to our classic blunder. Thank you for letting me take that parental excursus. When we look to our kids to make us happy, they're going to disappoint. So is your spouse. And this is a temptation for all of us. It is a worship disorder. You have a choice. There are sources, some real, some imagined, that will bring you a modicum of happiness. Some people use alcohol, the marijuana. Some people will use pornography. Some people will use just working to make money and money and money because they're really good at business and it makes them feel happy because they're successful there. All of those things are idols, all of them. And it indicates we're not worshiping rightly. We always have a choice in the moment. Who am I going to worship? Who is going to be my source of fulfillment and contentment? And if you are thinking about having kids or you've got them, you might want to make this adjustment lickety-split. Determine that you are only going to rely on Jesus to bring you the peace that surpasses all understanding. That you are only exclusively going to run to him to be your comfort, to be your strength, to be your hope, to be your joy. Now, once you do that, it raises a question. What am I having kids for? I mean, then what's the point of getting married? Exactly. I wish somebody had told me this before I got married, not because it would have kept me from getting married. It would have kept me from being a knucklehead for years. Of course, I was unregenerate anyway, but of course I wanted my bride to make me happy. Why? Because that's all I knew. I didn't understand the transcendent meaning of marriage and parenting. Did we have kids? Yep, tripped right into it. Happily. Willingly. because we thought, well, that's just what you do, and it'll be fun. Surprise! Many aspects of parenting and even marriage aren't fun. Instead, they offer something better. Holiness. They grow us in holiness. School of character is what the home is. We become more loving, peaceful, patient, kind, gentle, practicing self-control a ton. That's one of the things that kids do for us. Furthermore, we need to remember we're not just procreating for the sake of making babies to keep the planet going. No, that's a Darwinian view. We've got image bearers of God, and we are training them up to love the Lord Jesus Christ. That's what parenting is about. And when we get our priorities straight, here's the kicker. Increasingly, guess what your kids are going to do? It doesn't mean they're necessarily going to sin less. But even as they do, when you have your priorities straight, they will actually make you happy. This is Wretched Radio. Let's play a word association game. I will give you several words and several short phrases, and you need to figure out what they all have in common. Are you ready? Go. Telehealth. A huge PPO network. $3 billion of medical bills. Double the satisfaction rate. Saving an average of $500 per month. What do all of those words and phrases have in common? The answer is MediShare, affordable biblical health sharing. Your family will likely save on average $500 per month. And according to their surveys and polls, you're going to be twice as happy with MediShare than you were with your traditional health insurance. Would you like to know what your family will be saving every month? Please call 1-844-34-BIBLE, 844-34-BIBLE for MediShare.
Hey, thank you for listening to Wretched Radio today. Have you been getting the monthly Wretched newsletters into your email? If you haven't, you should feel slighted and left out because you're really missing out. You're missing messages that are thorough and in-depth and cover a wide range of theological issues Christians are facing. You're missing updates on all the new things going on at Wretched. Updates on resource release dates, updates on upcoming sales in the Wretched store, and the most important update of all, Todd's haircut and beard trim schedule. And you're missing out on it all if you're not subscribed. But it's simple to rectify this huge mistake in your life. Just head over to wretched.org/newsletter and get all signed up. Oh, and I forgot to mention, as a subscriber to the Wretched Monthly Newsletter, you're eligible to win free stuff. We give resources away every day here at Wretched Radio to our newsletter subscribers. So don't miss the free stuff. wretched.org/newsletter. That's wretched.org/newsletter. Wretched. Amazing grace, amazing gospel.
If you like to support ministries that focus on sharing the gospel, you will love Tomorrow Clubs in Eastern Europe. Weekly kids meeting clubs where the kids get loved on and they hear the gospel, like Armic from the Republic of Georgia.
2 years ago, I was invited to a camp organized by the Tomorrow Clubs. Tomorrow Clubs helped me see Jesus was my God and Savior. If it hadn't been for the Tomorrow Clubs, I would never have learned about Jesus.
$30 per month will be sufficient for a Tomorrow Club to operate, gather the kids, and preach the gospel to them in places like Georgia and Ukraine and Romania and Russia. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club? $30 a month, 30 disciples. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Know your reformers. John Wycliffe, called the Morning Star of the Reformation, was a professor at Oxford in the 1300s who preached against papal authority in matters of doctrine, politics, and church practice. After his death, his bones were dug up, burned, and spread over the river. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's have the Romans 13 rubber meet the road. This is Wretched Radio. Before we get How this is, oh, this is, oh, like a kidney stone. This hurts a lot. Jimmy, during the break, brought up a very good point, and he did it quite sarcastically. Jimmy, what did you say after our discussion about parents looking to their kids for happiness?
I said kids ruin everything.
That's the attitude.
I'm not sarcastic.
And you're right. They do. And that is yet another exercise in helping us to know if our kids have become idols or not. If we think they've ruined everything, it's probably because we have a longing and a love for the things that we sacrifice on behalf of our children. If having children caused you to never again be able to eat cilantro or lima beans, would you think that they ruined everything? You'd be like, well, no, not a fan of either one of those things. So no skin off my nose. Bingo. So if you think, well, having more money is a sacrifice that I miss, that's because you're loving money, career, free time, the ability to just loaf around, having a clean house, that's gone. If those things make you go, oh, the kids just ruined everything, it's God's kindness to us to show us that those things are idols. That's why Jimmy's statement was painfully profound. Although, Jimmy,
that's what I meant by it.
The sarcasm just rich. Let's see if we can apply Romans 13 to the real world. As you know, the first several verses, 1-7, discuss the issue of submission to the government. What does that look like, especially when in Acts chapter 2 and 4 and in the book of Daniel and the story of Rahab and the Apostle Paul sometimes fleeing persecution? How do we put all of this together when we see, courtesy of other parts of the Bible, that there are times when the Christian has to say to the government, sorry, can't do it. Would love to be able to accommodate it. Why would we talk like that? Because we want to be respectful. But my supreme authority is the Lord, and I've got to do what he tells me to do. And if you tell me otherwise, well, I'm sorry, he wins. Knowing that, Romans 13 also tells us you got to be ready for the consequence. And this is a perfect example of how to put this entire thing together. Received an email from a brother up in Canada stating, Friel, you mentioned that you don't think there's any more church restrictions in Canada. He said there absolutely are. This particular church is in Alberta. And he sent to me, which I hold in my never before nicotine stained fingers, the new rules from the Alberta government. Here they are. Capacity limited to 1/3 fire code occupancy. Masks are mandatory. 2 mattresses. What's a mattress? I don't know this. I'm just confused about what a mattress is. 2 mattresses of physical distancing between households or 2 close contacts for those living alone. Okay. Obey or not to obey? That is the question. We need to consider realms of authority when we consider Romans 13. The government has a realm of authority, but it's limited. The family has a realm of authority. It, too, is limited. Furthermore, the church has a realm of authority. It's limited also. We can't just crash into everybody's business, telling them what to do. That's what Pharisees do. We're gospel preachers. And we can also preach prophetically, not that we predict the future, but prophetically against, hey, realm, that's sinful. Repent of that. Stop that. This is what God says about your behavior. We do that, should do that, all day, every day. That's the role of the church. Now, the question is, when they intersect, do you have to obey? If you recall, from a new Presbyterian friend of mine, Pastor Noah Bailey, at First Reformed Presbyterian Church of Cambridge, something like that. It's really long title. Super cool building, by the way. I mean, wow, is it a couple hundred years old. Just an amazing church. And he's a really, really smart local preacher. We have many of those out there, I'm pleased to say. And he used some words that helped me to refine the difference between physical and spiritual. Those are the words that I've been using. If it's spiritual, the government can't tell you what to do. They can't say your liturgy needs to be done in this order. Ah, no. Your confession needs to go there. Or no, you can't say that, that you can't have any prayers for the government. Sorry. We obey God. You don't have any authority in the spiritual realm. However, we do let them have authority in the physical realm. Building, codes, plumbing, etc. We do what we're told, and we really don't have any qualms about that. Even though you could argue, and I think persuasively, that's really none of their beeswax. It's not really their job description given by God. But they're in authority, so we try to do what we're told, a la Romans 13. And most people, so far historically, in America, have not been concerned about those things. Sometimes they can be onerous. Sometimes they can be expensive. You've got to do things that maybe you wouldn't be inclined to do to make your facility up to code, but you do them. And you probably don't think, I have the right to disobey because they're being tyrannical. You probably wouldn't do that. I've never seen anybody doing that. But now we've got a new bag of issues. And the government is indeed stepping into the church realm in unique ways. So we need to take a look at those ways and ask, when do we submit and when don't we? I used physical and spiritual. Pastor Noah, he used essential. The elements of worship that are essential. The regulative principle applied. Worship, preaching, praying, ordinances, fellowshipping. That's God commands that. This is how I want worship to be done. And if the government steps into that in any way, shape, or form, we have the right to say, can't accommodate that request because God says otherwise. But then Pastor Noah used a different word, circumstantial. The circumstances around your worship. What if the government came in and said, your pews are too high. They need to be lowered for everybody to sit in them, or vice versa. What would you do? Well, you'd probably obey that because, well, there's maybe ADA things to consider. So sure, we'll do that. But they're asking more these days. And in Alberta, that seems to be the case. When you get together for worship, they're limiting the number of people who can be there. Masks are mandatory. You've got to have 2 meters, so probably 6 feet between you. All right. Question. Are those commands from the government physical or spiritual? Are they essential or circumstantial? Please note, most likely with this particular list, you are going to have different churches with different responses. It is almost a certainty. And we've got to be really slow to not make our local church conviction somebody else's local church conviction, because these are rather tricky areas. For instance, capacity limited to 1/3, fire code occupancy. Okay, why? It has nothing to do with fire code. It's just the measurement they're using to tell you you've got to limit the number of people who attend your service. Some churches are going to go, no problemo, we will have 2 services or 3 or whatever. And I there's been churches that do that. However, there's going to be some churches that would say, no, the body gets together. We do communion. These might most likely would be churches who would never do 2 services because they think that divides the body. Your church may not have that conviction, but they do. And they are going to say, well, we can't do multiple services. Therefore, we cannot obey this command to limit our occupancy to 1/3. We can't do it. This is, I think, a fair application of Romans 13 along with Acts 2 and 4, etc., that churches can make. On the other hand, I think some churches are going to accommodate it. Masks. What about the government says for you to worship, you've got to put on a mask. Well, this is a physical thing, isn't it? Yes, definitely that, because they're asking you to adorn your body with a diaper on your face. However, we've got to ask the question, is it a spiritual issue? Some churches are going to say, no, I don't think so. Other churches are going to say, yeah, we greet each other warmly. We see each other, and we're not going to muffle our praise by putting something over our mouths, particularly that we don't think are all that effective anyway. In other words, we're going to see a different application of the very same verses, but done differently by individual churches. And we need to wrestle through them in our own local churches without getting ticked at everybody who makes a different decision, and using essential versus circumstantial, physical versus spiritual to help guide us through having the Romans 13 rubber meet the road. This is Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I'm Jimmy Hicks. Well, a federal judge in Texas ruled earlier this week that for-profit businesses with sincerely held religious beliefs are exempt from LGBT discrimination liability. And without getting into all the details and particulars of the case, why did this have to be a lawsuit in the first place? I mean, why does a business owner need to prove any sincerely held beliefs in order to deny service to anyone? That used to be a thing in this country. And even from the other side, businesses should be able to freely deny service to Christians if they choose. And Christian businesses should be free to deny anyone for any reason. But obviously, this isn't the same America it once was. Well, police in Colorado have been searching for an abortion activist that they believe vandalized a church in October. Police say the suspect damaged the church on the early morning of October 10th by spray painting "Satan Lives Here" and "White Supremacists" and other hate symbols on the doors, walls, and columns of the church. The incident is part of a string of vandalism targeting churches and pro-life organizations in recent months. Well, the woke really want you to believe that critical race theory is not being taught in public schools, but one teacher says, nope, it is, and those who say otherwise are just lying. In a recently released video, the man cites multiple instances of how CRT is being snuck into schools, and he says at this point, if someone says that public K through 12 schools are not teaching CRT, they, number one, are either lying, or number two, are so conformed to the worldview that they just don't recognize it as CRT anymore. Parents need to be aware and prepare to protect their children from this racist ideology. Well, on Tuesday, voters in Texas overwhelmingly supported a measure that bars governments from taking any type of action that limits religious services, including public health orders that shut down houses of worship. Proposition 3, as it's known, will add a clause to the Texas state constitution which forbids state or local authorities from prohibiting religious services. The proposition garnered 62.4% support during the Tuesday election, with supporters agreeing that individual people in churches should be in charge of their own health care decisions and their own risk-to-reward behaviors. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Important dates in Christian history. 1273. Thomas Aquinas completes work on Summa Theologica, the theological masterpiece of the Middle Ages. Aquinas synthesized faith and reason, incorporating Aristotelian philosophy into his work, and provided a theological framework for Catholic doctrine. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
More Romans 13 conundrums. This is Wretched Radio, applying Romans 13, submitting to the government. That's our trajectory. We desire to be obedient to God's clear and repeated commands to submit to the government, obey the authorities. That's how we jump out of the gate. Yep. Want to obey, want to submit, because there's bigger things going on here than just my convenience or preferences, or dare I say, even liberties. There's a spiritual thing going on, and God is using this. God is using bad leaders to accomplish his purposes. Don't believe me? Take a trip to the cross. Jesus Christ was God's prearranged plan. God used wicked people like Pontius Pilate like the Jews who were taunting, crucify him, crucify him. God used all of it, knew it was going to happen, ordained it, is not responsible for their sin, but he uses their sin sinlessly to accomplish his perfect purposes. And if that is true with the death of our Savior, why isn't it true for us? This should be a comfort to us that God, in the midst of the squeeze that we're currently feeling, is doing something for his glory and for our good. This is inescapable. You can be assured of this. You just received the letter in the mail that said your property taxes are going up. God ordained that. It's for your good. But we don't have the money. It's for your good. He's doing something. He's working something out that is undoubtedly bigger than what is in our purview. We tend to look at physical kingdoms, physical realms. God is building a spiritual kingdom, a spiritual realm, an eternal realm. That's what he's after. And he uses governments as ministers to accomplish his purposes. So when we hear something from the government that just makes us want to slap our forehead like we want a V8, we ask the question, all right, Lord, you do everything for my good. So I'm going to try to be obedient if I can and grow in you and trust you more as I seek to be obedient, because I know you have much bigger plans than I do. But there are going to be times when we receive a dictate from the government, when we get to say, can't do it. We can't do it. But we need to make sure that we are doing it as biblically as we can, because otherwise, I promise you, your flesh is going to desire to rebel. This is why it had to be spelled out twice for us. If there were, for instance, here's something that is not in your Bible. When you open up a Jell-O pudding, do not lick the aluminum cap to get the stuff that kind of, you know, went up there.
Why?
Well, it's just a command. Okay, oh. I'm just making something up here.
Okay.
Don't get upset. You can still lick it if you want to. It's not actually in the Bible. You can use your concordance for Jell-O pudding. You're not going to find it. You would go, I don't need that. Exactly. That's why it's not in there. God twice in detail. No, three times. Titus, 1 Peter, Romans 13. Tells us, submit to the government, because our inclination is to not do that. We immediately will run as fast as we can to the exceptions that we prefer. That is why those commands exist. And so you and I need to be loaded with the knowledge, all right, God is working things out. I don't have to like this in order to be obedient, but there are going to be times, we know this, that they can cross a line, because we see examples of this in the Bible, and we see the response of believers going, sorry, I can't comply with that. I can't give you that information. I can't worship that. I can't stop preaching. And we define or describe those responses in two categories that I think are helpful. Pick your favorite, physical and spiritual, or essential and circumstantial. Remembering realms of authority, God has given at least three. You could argue four, which could be the workplace. You could even argue five in an educational system, that the tutor is over the student. You could argue those things. Regardless, they have realms, and that means they have lines. And when they cross them, it doesn't mean that I automatically get to disobey them. I need to figure out, is this a physical or spiritual deal? Is this an essential or a circumstantial issue? We have two of those for your consideration. In Alberta, Canada, you must separate in worship 6 feet between one another. Now, should a church obey that? Well, the church should desire to, but the church is going to now go, okay, well, that's my desire. I want to be an obedient citizen. That's what I want to do. But now, I'm still being told we've got to separate by 6 feet. Perhaps a church is able to accommodate that. They've got a bigger building than they have people, so it's no big deal. They might choose to do it. But there could be other Christians who say, wait a second now. Even though this is a physical issue, it's still worship is a community affair. And separating us? We don't get to greet one another with a holy kiss or at least a slight side hug with maybe a back pat? We can't do, sorry, you can't tell us that. And you're going to have different churches making different decisions. And I think that they can both be valid and everything in between. But we want to make sure that we make these decisions based on biblical principles, not on preferences. Here's another example for your consideration. Jimmy, I think you talked about this in the news. In an Oregon city, the name of the town is Brookings, Oregon, limits how often a church feeds the homeless. Pastor's going, sorry, can't obey that. Now, there are indeed some interesting details in this that I think are an aside that might cause a church to say, well, maybe we should consider how we're doing this or even where we're doing this. I think those details are worth considering. These churches in this little 6,000-person town, they're all in neighborhoods. And the neighbors are like, we don't like it because it brings an element of criminality. And they tend to make a bit of a mess of our property. So would you please stop it? And the city council said, okay, we'll make them stop. They can't do that. Now, we're going to tackle whether they need to obey or not. But I do believe that a church should listen to those things and maybe ask, okay, do we have the systems in place? Are we doing everything we can to love our neighbors too? Not just the homeless, but to love our neighbors. We want to be smart about that. So maybe we need to set it up in a different location. We need to work with a mall and they'll let us be in the parking lot and we'll set up a tent and that's where. So I could see a church trying to accommodate the complaints of neighbors in that way because we don't want to undermine our testimony, but let's get to the core issue. The government says you can't do that. Now, if a church decides that the concern for neighbors just is not their concern, should they obey this? Should they no longer feed the homeless? Well, let's consider what Jesus said about this subject. I do believe in his discourse with the Pharisees, where he was describing true and false converts, where he was describing legalists. He enters into a diatribe about hell and judgment, right hand, left hand, and how is that determination going to get made? By those who take care of people who are hungry, feeding people, clothing people who are naked. I think you could make a strong case. These are things that the Christian and the church should be striving to obey. Now, please note this. That can manifest itself in a myriad of ways, just so many ways. For instance, a church wants to feed the homeless, but they maybe don't have the facilities, or about three blocks away, there's a church that has a magnificent program set up. Could it be that that church then says, you know what, we've got an abundance of funds. Let's give our money to them so that they can do a better job feeding the home. Boom. Then you're feeding the home. You're helping. And there's so many ways that you can do that. And churches might be, well, giving out a Bible. That's loving the homeless. There's a myriad of ways that we can manifest obedience to the command to take care of people who are suffering and struggling and being abused. And so if the government steps in and says, you can't do that, and there's no option, there's no other way to do it, I think you're going to have some churches like this particular church that's featured in this article from the Christian Post. I think it's Christian Post stating, it's from Vice.com, saying, yeah, we can't do this. This is something that we have to do because we've been commanded by God to do it. And I think, therefore, if there are no other options, no other ways to do it in a way that doesn't annoy the neighbors, break the rules of the city council, I think a church could do that without a guilty conscience. But if the church does have a guilty conscience and they feel like they got to do it right where they're doing it, and if the government is telling them no, then they have biblical permission to not. But they shouldn't be shocked when they feel the consequences. And this is where it can be difficult because it's like we're doing the right thing here and the government now is going to shellack us. Yep. It's exactly what Romans 13 says, that we need to be willing to pay the price for our not obeying the government. And different Christians and different local churches are going to make those decisions differently. This is Wretched Radio.
Well, are you ready for another road trip? Of course you are. Just grab your luggage and let's load up. Okay, not really. You don't need to bring anything but maybe a pen and notebook for our next Road Trip to Truth Season 2, because it's here and it's available now at roadtriptotruth.org. And I know you're asking, how are you guys able to improve on the first season? Well, we have all new experts and new lessons that powerfully counter all of the continuous assaults on Christianity. Those assaults unfortunately wind up sidelining many youth and adults, and so we're diving into topics like the gospel, environmentalism, abortion, pornography, agnosticism, 13 total lessons, as a matter of fact, with new experts like Pastor Milton Vincent, Dr. Greg Gifford, Dr. John Street, Scott Klusendorf, Jess Arns, and more. Road Trip to Truth Season 2. It's on sale right now. And don't forget about the study guide. It's available as well. RoadTripToTruth.org or wretched.org/roadtrip.
If any of you don't mind me saying so, I resonate with this sentiment from Dan Steiner of Preborn Ministries.
To be able to look across America and see this holocaust of abortion and know that people like you are doing something about it. It's one thing to say that we're against abortion, but it's really another to take action.
Do you resonate with that sentiment? Then please consider supporting Preborn Ministries. Ultrasounds save lives. For $28, you will be providing an ultrasound that 80% of the time causes the mother to choose life. That's really doing something. May I ask, how many babies' lives could you save for $28 each? Preborn Ministries also preaches the gospel to the mommies and the daddies, and you can learn more at preborn.org/wretched, preborn.org/wretched.
You know, just a quick perusal of the Wretched store and wretched.org, and you'll notice resources like Road Trip to Truth, Life is Best, Untethered, Wretched Worldview, and all of our resources have one very distinct thing in common. And no, it's not Todd's ugly mug. Okay, maybe two things in common, but what I'm referring to, or who I'm referring to, is you. Seriously, because if you're a gospel partner, you are actually responsible for the resources we produce. We're just the mouthpiece, but our gospel partners are the engines that make Wretched run. Without you, there is no us. So if you're already a gospel partner, we humbly thank you. And if you're not an ongoing monthly gospel partner, would you please prayerfully consider becoming one and help us continue producing biblically sound, Christ-centered content to reach the lost and edify the saints? Visit wretched.org/donate to get all the details on becoming a Wretched Gospel Partner today. That's wretched.org/donate. It truly does take us all.
Books of the Bible. The book of Joel describes a series of disasters that serve as God's judgment and a warning that an even more severe day of judgment is coming. When you see the power and fury of creation, do not fear nature, but fear him who controls nature. But if God's people will turn to him in repentance, he will be compassionate and rescue them. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
All I can say is, Dermon Deralis Verenderta. This is Wretched Radio. That's all I can say because, well, that's all I can say in German.
Say it again.
Dermon. Oh, you can figure that out. Dermon. Can you hear that? What would that be? You hear man.
Man. Okay. I got
and
it.
Der is a definite article.
Ah.
It's masculine. So der man. Der, in this instance, it would be, the who pronoun. Alles, everything, verenderter. You probably don't hear anything there, but changed. The man who changed everything. It is a German way of saying the man who split time. Apparently, they don't have that particular colloquialism to describe what Jesus did. He changed the calendar. He split time from B.C. to A.D. And there are 22 proofs, at least in this booklet, now translated into German, that proves that Jesus Christ is God. 22 Beweise. Dass Jesus Christus Gott ist. German isn't that hard, is it? Because you hear a lot of words that's like, yeah, I know what that is. 22 proofs, 22 reasons that Jesus Christ God is. That booklet is now going to be distributed in the land of the Reformation, at least the seedbed of it, which was Deutschland, courtesy of one Martin Luther. So a bunch of Christians over there said, hey, that booklet could be really helpful to distribute. They asked us if they could have permission, and it's like, are you kidding? Thrilled to pieces. Do whatever you need to do and translate it and get it out there. And they did, and now it is being printed and distributed in Germany. So to Vincent and the gang who worked very hard on this, thank you for your labors. Thank you for your efforts and your faithfulness to get the gospel out to a nation who's kind of lost it. It's a Lutheran state still, but it's in name only for most people. Der Mann der alles veränderte. No, it's not available in the U.S. unless, of course, we could consider maybe printing some here to distribute in Amish territory. Otherwise, I don't think that it's probably the best language to be using in America. Where else? There's other German places, right? There's a New Ulm, Minnesota.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. They speak Ulmer Deutsch there. It's kind of a kind of a half of this, half of that. A little German, little English mixed in there. Pennsylvania, that would be Dutch. They don't speak German. There's other pockets. There are pockets, fascinatingly, there are pockets everywhere. In Sacramento, there's a very large, I believe, Ukrainian community there. And in fact, all the way over in a suburb of Atlanta, there's a number of big Romanian Baptist churches. There are certain parts of Atlanta. If you drive through them, unless you speak Korean, you won't be able to read the signs outside of their stores, because it's that strong of a Korean community that they don't put it up in English. They put it up in Korean. There are pockets of those around the country. And yeah, I think it's good to have literature to bring to them. We probably, though, aren't going to be doing German anytime soon. But a shout out to Vincent and everybody in Deutschland who is indeed distributing The Man Who Split Time, 22 Proofs That Jesus Is God. I have to tell you, Jimmy.
Yes?
Reading this hurt a little bit. I picked up every...
I understand. I had a
fifth word, maybe.
I had a teacher in middle school that was fluent in German and taught us German through the year. I remember one phrase today, which is mach schnell.
Make it snappy.
Come quick. Hurry up. Right. That's all I remember.
Okay. Some of my favorite vocables. Friel, we didn't ask. Going to give it to you anyway. This is the way that I learned German and Latin. It was just a drubbing, and Greek. It was just bang, bang. Memorize vocables, declensions, conjugations. This is how you just bang it into your noggin. And Hebrew was the worst, hands down. Here's my favorite German vocable. Man verdankt ihm dieses Drama. We are indebted to him for his drama. I think we were translating Goethe, if I'm not mistaken, and it was a phrase that you'd never figure out. So we had to memorize, we are indebted to him for his drama in German. There's got to be a better way of learning languages. Actually, there is. There's an immersive way of learning languages. And there's a few that just, boy, talk about pockets around the country. There's a few places that will do that. They will just bring you into the classroom and all they're going to do is speak German. And they do it in a way that forces you to see it, feel it. They start out very basically. So things like stand up, sit down, and then they do it with the words being connected to it. Setzen Sie wohl. Okay. Motioning, sit down, sit down now. And they immerse you in the language and you learn it. The other way is the old fashioned way, which is what I got drubbed with, is you just memorize it. You have to confess, an odd way to learn a language. If you're considering learning Koine Greek, you have to recognize we don't learn English this way. You don't sit there going, all right, I want to talk about going to the grocery store, but I need to put it into the second person. So it's I, me, no, that's third person. He, no, that's the, we don't do that. Wait, is that, would that be the dative case? You just talk. And that's an immersive way of learning, and you can pick stuff up, I think, much quicker that way. However, when it comes to Koine Greek, I would say do something immersive for sure with German. But if you're looking to translate Greek and use your Greek New Testament in order to know what the original authors were saying in the cases and the tenses, the word order, learning it maybe the old-fashioned way is going to help you to be a better translator of it. It's not going to help you be a better speaker of it. I don't know. I had some really smart guys in Greek class. And after 4 years, none of them sat around speaking in Greek. Because you just didn't learn it that way. You learned it in order to interpret it. Now, might there be an advantage in being immersed into the Greek language first and then doing more of a didactic approach? Absolutely. I think there could be. But I don't think that the immersive way should be the exclusive way. Because you're going to learn how to become a Greek speaker, and that's cool. But you're not going to be a good Greek translator. Because you do have to know case. There are, I think, 23 genitives that you need to know. 23. Genitive of possession is the obvious one. Genitive of place. It all has implications when you study the language. And if you don't study those details, bang, 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 and knocking it into your head, then you're not gonna pick up on what the commentator or what the Greek scholar is actually saying. All that to say, we're very thrilled that Der Mann der Alles Veränderte has been published. You got a quizzical look, Jimmy.
Well, isn't there a resource somewhere that can help you learn Greek?
I love you, man. It's not Greek to me. It will get you down the road of seeing how the Greek language works. It's super helpful. I honestly do believe every Christian should at least study that much Greek, not so that you can learn how to speak it, not so that you can even learn how to translate it, because you're not going to be memorizing any vocables. You are just going to be learning, okay, God, I didn't even know what a genitive was. Now I do. That's what you'll learn, and it's not Greek to me. And by the way, if you'd like to distribute The Man Who Split Time, 22 Proofs That Jesus Is God, courtesy of Phil Johnson and Todd Frielius wrote the booklet, that is available at wretched.org/something or another. I think there's a hyphen in there. Something dash or dash other. You'll find it immediately. Here's a question. This is another opportunity to try to apply Romans 13. Here it is. Proof of vaccination required for marriage licenses in Oakville, Ontario. Wow. That started in September. That you've got to be providing proof of identification, proof of full COVID-19 vaccination. And if you want to get married, you've got to prove that you've been vaccinated. What should a Christian do? I think a Christian needs to go back to making the biblical case for why they believe that it either is or isn't a sin to take the jab. It needs to be done theologically. It needs to be done. I think you also need to study it medically, but mostly theologically. And if you come to the conviction, I can do it, I can take the jab, then take the jab. If you don't think you can, then you shouldn't, because then you'd be violating your conscience. Does that mean you shouldn't get married? What would I do? Well, I'm not in this groom's shoes, but I would say, if I were opposed to the vaccination, I would say, that's all right. I don't need the state to authorize it. I'm not going to get the bennies. I won't get the recognition. We might have to pay more in taxes, which is the consequence of not obeying a dictate of the government, Romans 13, 1 through 7. But I can be married in the eyes of God, because God recognizes and acknowledges a state marriage. But ultimately, for the Christian, our covenant is not with the state. It is with God. So you could still be a married couple covenanting before God without having the state involved. And that might just be the option if you believe it would be a sin to take the vaccination, but you want to say, I do, lickety split. Decisions, decisions these days. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.